This is a bit of a round robin. I'm going to talk a bit about a few things that we don't have in a normal late show, in a normal review. Things that have arrived and that we're now holding up to the camera and talking about in varying degrees of detail. For one of them, it will actually be something like a full review. Some of the things have only just arrived here at very short notice. So it's a year-end greeting, a colorful one. Let's start with Feenlicht by L. Gleiss, and we hope to ensure that these books exist in print, in that we had a goal this year, I think, or last year with people who produce Heartbreaker Indies, who write role-playing games primarily for themselves and maybe for a small group of friends and have been developing and playing them for years. And Feenlicht by Lena Gleiss is one of them. And if I remember correctly, Lel said after the talk, now I'm actually going to get to grips with it and make a physical copy of it. That's what happened, and now there's not just the rulebook, but also a world book that came after it. I can't say much about that yet. I remember Lil describing it. That the name is perhaps not so closely connected to what happens, but that it conveys the feeling of the game relatively well, something a bit mysterious, a bit gentler, and I think that the whole layout and presentation with these soft colors also conveys that nicely. It's actually a really beautifully laid out book, super clear, super pleasant to read and with incredibly tastefully chosen colors for the background. I can't do that, but when I see it, I recognize that someone has done it with knowledge and taste. The blurbs say that Feenlicht is the role-playing game. Feenlicht is a role-playing system in which several friends create characters in a fantasy world, put themselves in the shoes of these characters and, under the guidance of a game master, begin to explore that world. The world of Feenlicht has its own omnipresent kind of magic. This is made up of the interaction of the various elements and gives it a gentle kind of mysticism. The roleplay is one of the quieter tones. There is no such thing as pouring magic or almost invincible heroes. The focus is more on the development of the various characters than on the mandatory completion of life-threatening adventures. Although that can happen too. Feenlicht and all its other books are freely available at feenlichtenspiel.de and will remain so. If you are not yet sure whether you want to own this book, then you can find out more there. If you prefer to turn the pages rather than swipe, if you prefer a free pen to digital ink, and if you like to install loads of bookmarks made of paper rather than bytes, then this book gives you the opportunity to let off steam as you please. And then below is a blurb by Michael Bart. You can feel the love and enthusiasm that the author Lil Gleiss has invested in her project over years of work. Feenlicht is a successful, complex role-playing game with a clear emphasis on character development and character play, without sacrificing a comprehensive set of rules that is in close symbiosis with the background world. It is definitely a very pleasant story and a great introduction to the world. In this volume, as a game master, you will find further information on how the world of Feenlicht works on the inside, how it is structured and at least a rough overview of who lives where. This book contains the heart of what makes Feenlicht what it is. If you want to present this world credibly to your players, reading these roughly 100 pages is highly recommended. Feenlicht and all its other books are freely available at feenlichtenspiel.de and will remain so. So if someone wants to sell you this book at a high price, you'd be better off having it printed yourself using the print template on that page. That way you get a cheap version that you can leaf through instead of swiping. It's all very anti-capitalist. Sherastem Starter Set. The Sherastem is the role-playing system that was originally developed for Numenera, then used for The Strange and over time for a whole host of other role-playing games from Monte Cook Games, and now also exists as a standalone set of rules. The Sherastem has two basic pillars. One is that the game master doesn't have to roll dice. That means it's kept as simple as possible for the game master, or without you being busy the whole time and being able to do other things, and that there are either items or small superpowers that you ideally use immediately and as the mood takes you, because you get new ones regularly and they are usually determined using random tables. Let's take a look at what's in the starter set. It's one of those that are intended not to be used as a box afterwards. This is just a relatively thin cover made of somewhat sturdier paper or extremely thin cardboard, somewhere on the edge of the definition with inserts that go at the front of the whole thing. This is in at AD 20 and AD 6. Those are the only two types of dice that are needed. It's AD 20 system. The D6 is for certain tables in general. A whole series of cards that have already escaped from their envelope here. These are EG XP cards in the Sheristem game. The GM also distributes XP in the middle of the game for certain things, e.g. if they let something bad happen. And the players can either spend experience points to develop their characters further or spend them again at different costs for medium or short-term advantages, such as a single reroll. So, that's a handful of things, just XP cards. And then we have an intrusion deck. Intrusion is what the GM does to escalate a situation, to let misfortune happen that advances the story and then in return gives the players an XP and they pass another on. It's such a fair mechanism and a transparency mechanism. In general, Numenera doesn't make a big deal about how it works. There aren't any big secrets from the game management, as long as everything stays fair. And on each of these cards there are three suggestions for what kind of intrusion you can bring in, what kind of game management interruption, one for a combat situation, one for an interaction and one that is simply miscellaneous, a collection pot. By the way, these intrusions are also triggered when you roll a critical failure. That means they aren't just made by the game management for fun. And I think these cards are specifically for those that are triggered by a critical error, because then you can get inspiration from them as to what it is. So, this is an overview card. What should all be in here and what is it for? Then we have a cheat sheet. What do the terms mean? Numenera works a little bit the other way around to most D20 systems. In that you don't necessarily have to roll against a fixed value. You don't roll the dice and then add something to it. You have a given value and can buy the test more easily by spending points from your attributes. And information about which weapons do how much damage that's relatively standardized, and how do you determine the difficulty of a test. Here are cards, dungeon cards, clear but tasteful. There we are again. I wouldn't know how to design these colors, but I think they're nice. And I strongly suspect that they're part of the adventure that's included here. So, we have the player's book here, which explains the rules, including game examples. As with most share system books, everything is very nicely done with lots of illustrations and the typical Monty Cook Games margin column, in which things are linked and explained again. These are some of the most usable books because you can always find what you're looking for. But from our own experience, translating them into German is a nightmare for the people who do the layout. Ah, and this is the Game Master's book. And there are two adventures in here, which are then each card, as well as a bit of an expansion on how the churn work. How does it work with the GM intrusions? Here, too, as I said, it is extremely clear, with references and random additional information, which is always stored in the columns. I've already shown you the card, and these are finished character sheets. Okay. I think I'd like to play it. The character sheets, even from Numenera onwards, were mostly designed to be folded like a triptych, or to be divided into columns. This is a steel explorer who moves like a cat. So who the characters are created, those are the three main parts, and then there's a bit of background story, connections and that kind of thing. But with an adjective, a descriptor, a type, in this case explorer, and with a focus, which gives you something like superpowers that complement the type, then the character is basically finished and this person here moves like a cat and obviously likes cats too. Now I need to know what the Oocopus is. Oocopus is called H and is a clever adept who talks to machines. It is a cyber octopus. And then we have here, they are all very, very cyberpunk or Numenera-like, and here we have a fantasy variant. Wait a minute. Learn adapt to be the Halo of Fire. It is definitely the adapt. We would say that the octopus and this person with the wizard's hat are variants of each other. That didn't surprise me. At Monico Games, it is very nice game material and it is high quality game material too. You cannot reuse the box. I always find that a bit of a shame, because these boxes are great if they are high quality enough and sturdy enough that you don't just leave the introductory material in them, but that you also collect notes and other materials in them over time. We have a whole series of introductory boxes that are now full to the brim with other material that has been collected in them, and then you can just take the box with you when you go somewhere to play with it. That's a bit of a shame. But you can reduce the price by doing that, so it's more a matter of taste. At a quick glance, it seems very clear. The rules are explained quickly and easily. Cheat, cheat. I think it's a really good introductory box. Not one that contains an insane amount of playing time. It's really one to jump in and play two adventures and then you know whether you like it and want to get more out of it or not. There are also introductory boxes that you can play for what feels like months, like the one for Splittermint. Okay, let's move on to two small games from Systemes Verlag, at least in German from Systemes Verlag. One is Buttle Sea and the other is Immortal Desert. Wrong. And we played the Immortal Desert as a test and decided on Dragonbane, if I remember correctly. That's one thing, they are hex field exploration adventures or sandboxes, but they are more or less rule agnostic. You have to decide for yourself what kind of system you want to use, although it makes a lot of sense to use a system that is a bit old school and that is also about exploration. And with a few quick moves we managed to combine the suggestions that are in here for monster encounters and travel rules with Dragonbane and then started playing and experienced amazing things. We didn't plow through the contents of Buttle Sea that much, but I can say more about Immortal Desert here. It comes as a fold-out game master screen, which has all the relevant tables on the inside for what you can encounter and what the individual tiles, I'll come to that in a moment, contain in terms of things that you can fall on your feet there or that will fall on your feet at some point, including more detailed information on two larger locations that exist in the Immortal Desert, the Forgotten Pyramids and the Great Desert City. Accordingly, there are also individual plans for these on Tina 4. These are the Forgotten Pyramids. We visited them and this is the Great Desert City. We arrived there too. It all looks like hidden object pictures and cute and reminds me a bit of Deponia artwork. And I think that's a pretty good comparison in the sense that it's quite humorous. It's not a dry, absolutely serious OSR fantasy. But one of the reasons for going to the desert, for example, is because you are interested in the fact that the Necrocamelomancers are holding races on undead camels in the big desert city. And you can also bring particularly good undead camels or bet on them or do something else with them. That means that it is a somewhat weird or silly desert in places, and it is also full of robots and irradiated things and the like. So a colorful mix, as Aldi would say, of different things that you could walk over your feet in an adventure like this in the past and that come together here again. Ancient temples, tombs with the undead, irradiated things, spaceship remains, but also very classic fantasy elements. But a lot of it is eye-opening and it can all be very dramatic. I think what we tell most people when we talk about this round is that Nico blew up the desert. That is what happened, and he did it on one of the hex fields. As mentioned, it is a hex field. Exploration game, and for this you put the entire immortal desert in this bag, and now the individual hex fields are in there. Some of them are labeled. This is hex field number 14, and that is the big desert city. You can draw that randomly, for example. But there are also a few other places that contain secret paths to the big desert city, and then you can find your way there, and when you have reached this hex field, you can lay out the other playground and then spend a lot of time there. There are also some that are not numbered and just show empty desert. But of course there are random tables on the game master screen where you can choose what should happen there or roll the dice to see what kind of encounters, challenges, monsters or something like that can await you there. And when you tear through the desert, you basically decide on a direction and then draw hex fields and see what you uncover. It can be that you just have a dry spell in between in the true sense of the word, or that some places also trigger you to say, now you lay out desert all around here, or events cause you to change the map, or even that the entire map is deleted and then laid out again. On each of these hex fields there are three different things as illustrations, and they are also explained in short sentences on the game master screen. This, for example, is hex field number 6. And here we see undead camels, a round ziggurat, and people who I think are pitting scorpions against each other. If I'm not sure now, I can just look directly here. Field number 6. An ancient evaporative cooler known as an ice cream cone can be used to capture and store ice, which is highly valued in the desert. If I transport it creatively, however, it melts in a day. I assume that is this thing here. Colony and dead camels that live in the middle of white limestone formation. In the big city, an asset for the necrocamelomancers. And then we have gambling outposts controlled by raiders, especially insect fights. Money is easily won and lost. The Insect Jerry by Games Omnivorous provides further inspiration. It directly refers to another book where you can look at things on themselves. We explored several of them and then interacted with the things you can find there and, among other things, blew up a giant tersee. There isn't that much there, as you've just noticed. That means the game master and the players are inspired by the short texts, the information and the illustrations, and then improvise. And that's the kind of game I like. We had a lot of fun with the Immortal Desert, played it one evening, did a lot of silly, created new characters because others had died, and yes, I don't know if it's the game for a big campaign, but it's for us want to play something different today and quickly create new characters where it's not a big deal if bad consequences happen. It worked really well. So, I'm pretty sure it works excellently with Dungeon Crawl Classics. I can also imagine that it works pretty well with Forblands, where hex field travel is also an important part. In general, many OS games or retro ones should work excellently with it. Here, for example, in Encounters it just says, for example, this means this and that, and it should be medium difficulty, and then you have to work out for yourself what that means in the rules you're using in that case.
I would give it an entry limit that you have to like games that aren't too serious. 8.5. Yes, I think it's a very good game that you need a second one for the rules, but it's great as inspiration, endlessly creative and great illustrations. And here's an extra flyer that they made for it, with another setting that you can put in somewhere and that I think you can put in any other adventure that takes place somewhere in a desert where there might be ancient royal tombs. It's also intended that you can just pop the Immortal Desert into another campaign. So now we have a part where we're out and about in the desert. That brings this year to an end, and that means that a Forsaken Vidot is coming out. It's been around for a few years now, and it's one of the best stupid puns in the German role-playing scene. What is it? It's a seeing that's published by System Matter Verlag that collects adventures that have some sort of Christmas theme. This year we have 40 pages and they contain a case for Brindlewood Bay. Miss the luxurious cruise ship Aretusa Stream with its 10 decks and a maximum passenger capacity of 500 people sets sail for the Caribbean under colorful sails as usual at Christmas. The crime expert has treated herself to a 7-day cruise from Florida via the Bahamas. Then some of the crew members fall victim to spoiled shrimp. And secondly, the news gets around that the much-loved pianist L. Brown was found dead on board with foam at the mouth and wide eyes, and how that works. You are given lots of suspects and clues that you combine, and at the end you roll the dice to see whether you have solved the case correctly. Then there is here is a list of the top 10 Christmas crimmies. Robin Masterson's top 5 Christmas crimmies, Slashing Around the Christmas Tree. All I Want for Christmas is a Murderess, Now Be Killed for Christmas, The 12 Kills of Christmas, Amanda's Last Christmas. Okay, so we have a Mouse Night Adventure, or rather a setting, and that is an old Christmas tree, or rather the Christmas tree plus the grandfather who has fallen asleep next to it. This is Mr. Schlabber. A musty box with glittery stuff, the mountain of bags, and the evergreen holiday tree, including the wooden house. Okay. And the last thing in here, which makes up half of it, is an adventure for Brancolonia, the role-playing game that is supposed to capture the flair of 70s and 80s Italo fantasy films, and it is called Pannoni for the Padrone. Panettone, if you don't know, is a traditional Italian Christmas cake, a bit dry perhaps, but obviously also suitable for hollowing out and smuggling criminals into it at a party somewhere. It is probably full of silly puns, and it even comes with a panettone recipe so that you can bake your own slightly dry Italian Christmas cake. It is crazy, and I am delighted just that it exists. Now this segment, and thus the video, if you watch it later on YouTube, is coming to an end. I firmly believe that you have been really great people this year and have interacted with all of our videos, including this one, such as a like or a comment or recommended something to other people, and I thank you for your support throughout the year and wish you happy holidays and a good journey into 2125, which will hopefully be a gentle welcome for you. Take care and see you then. Bye. He.